Hello and welcome to season two of my podcast. I've been absolutely blown away by the overwhelmingly positive response that we got to the first season. Thank you so much, everybody, for your kind words of support and encouragement, all of your feedback, and all of the shares across social media. But most importantly, thank you so much for listening to the show. And I am now so excited about season two, as we already have some incredible guests confirmed for the show. I know that you're absolutely going to love listening to them. You are going to learn loads from them. And I also think you're going to be pretty inspired by listening to them as well. But that's enough about the future. Let's talk about the episode that we've got coming up for you right now. In this episode, episode number 14, I'm joined by Dan Hawley. Dan joined PLB in the year 2000 after starting his career as a futures trader, and then he began running the business as the managing director in 2007. Dan leads a highly established yet entrepreneurial company who specialise in innovation within the retail sector. He works with some of the world's most loved and adored brands. He has an absolutely committed team and works relentlessly hard himself to encourage and build a positive, inspirational working environment. As always, we covered so much ground in this 30-minute conversation, including things such as the need to really dial up the human element of leadership right now, a deconstruction of how you create your own luck in business, as well as what it takes to make some really bold strategic decisions early on in your tenure as MD that will fundamentally change the future direction of the business. So, without any further introductions from me, please enjoy my conversation with Dan Hawley. Hey Dan, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Really good for a Friday. It's weather's okay, I guess. Weekend ahead. So yeah, I'm really good spirits, thank you.
Very good to hear. So Dan, the first question I always love to ask guests on the show to give everybody listening a little bit of context. Can you just tell us what's the current role and sort of the short version of your journey that got you there, if you will?
Of course, it'd be a pleasure. Not quite. I'll keep it as short as I can. I'm currently the managing director of the PLB Group. We are effectively an advertising agency that specialises in retail display, experience, innovation. I've been doing this for around 10 to 15 years, and my career to get here has been pretty varied. I started off, I guess, as a youngster in my early 20s, and I was a futures trader up in the city, trading in the coloured jackets. And that was an incredible experience. And a lot of the lessons I've really taken forward in my career. Unfortunately, it didn't last too long. I wasn't obviously the best futures trader. And the whole of that open outcry trading went computerised, which sort of rendered me pretty redundant in my skill set. So from then, I sort of meandered a little bit. I did some recruitment, which gave me some great sales training. And from then, I joined PLB in the early noughties, and I worked for 6 or 7 years learning about the trade, about effectively print, which is what the business was at that point. And then just sort of graduated my way up till in 2007, 2008, I was then given the opportunity to actually take the business forward. And from then on, it's been an incredible journey, actually. Lots of highs, masses of lows as well. And I find myself now with a business that, taking COVID to one side, you know, we've had some challenging years, but we've been on a nice growth trajectory, and we've developed some great clients.
So I think you said yourself just then, it's been an incredible journey, and I didn't quite realise your career history had been so varied. And I guess in that time, you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly in terms of leadership. I just wonder, from that journey, what would you say are sort of some of the biggest, most significant leadership lessons that you've learned that you now apply or would share with other people who are aspiring to maybe become an MD in the future?
Really good question. And I think for me personally, it's about learning. And even now, I quite often say to my team, you know, we've all still got our L plates on. And in as a managing director, that might be the sort of culmination of a journey to get here. But it's really just the beginning. And I've learned, I think every single day you learn, you know, and you learn particularly. And I learned this from my early days when I traded. Quite often, the best trades you make were the losing trades. And it's about learning when you make a mistake or you get things wrong. And trust me, every single managing director, senior management, CEO will make mistakes. And it's almost that fail fast mentality of learning, okay, what I've done is wrong. I've made a mistake. It's recognizing that. And then it's learning why you made that mistake. And more importantly, not to make the same mistake again. And trust me, when I was a trader in the early days, I made quite a lot of bad trades, shall we say. And it's learning to get out very quickly on that and to analyze the market again, have a look, understand why you made the decision, and more importantly, not to make the same mistake twice.
Yeah, and I'm curious, how do you, as an individual, make sure that you are learning then? Is that something that's just very much within your DNA? Do you have some sort of process? Do you deliberately carve out time to stop and reflect and learn? How does that work for you personally?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's learning about, I guess most importantly, I think from our business, is getting metrics in place to be able to measure, you know, and that can be all the way through from KPIs for individuals to ROI for, you know, investments and business decisions. There is gut instinct as well. And it's understanding what's working and what isn't, and being able to measure that, understand it, and make relatively quick decisions to turn things around or make changes. And that's something I think that's really important to the business. And it's something that we're really trying to hone in on so that we can really be fair on our staff, measure their performance and make decisions accordingly. And trust me, I've probably made more mistakes than most of the great leaders you've had on your podcasts. I haven't had a huge amount of formal training in leadership. Some of it, I think, comes quite naturally, and there's elements of leadership that don't. So equally, it's about building a good team around you, you know, and that I've found hugely important. And it's been a massive journey to get to a team that I now feel I've got in place that really adds and complements the skill sets I've got, but most importantly, the weaknesses that I've got. And, you know, there is no perfect leader out there. There's some brilliant leaders, but I'm pretty sure there's no one out there that's absolutely perfect. So combination of learning, having good metrics to understand, and also being relatively bold and decisive when you need to. And that's something that has taken a lot of time to come into my armor.
Yeah, okay. And is there anything in particular that has helped you to be more bold and decisive when you need to be? Or do you think it's just been passage of time with experience, you grow wiser and more able to make those decisions?
Yeah, that's pretty relevant. It was, do you know what? It's a combination of everything. I think as you go on in a specific role, you get better, you learn. But also I think the cost of some of the previous mistakes we made in terms of the actual physical cost, the time, the energy, I think really resonates. And I think it forces you as a human being to look very carefully and analyze exactly what the mistake was, what we did, what I did, and therefore not put myself in that position again. And 2-3 years ago, we had some very challenging times based on some decisions that I made that were the wrong decisions. And it cost so much in terms of time, energy, and actually the physical, you know, commercial side of it. But it was a big lesson. And from that, I really analyzed and looked very closely at what we did, how we did it, to make sure we don't find a position again. So as you go on through life and through the experience, I think you naturally continue to learn and absolutely continue to improve.
And there's an interesting segue here, Dan, actually, into another question I wanted to ask you. I saw a little video on LinkedIn that you'd recorded with one of your team. And early on in that video, I think you said one of the first things you did when you took over as MD was to get the business out of print. Now, I'll leave you to tell the story in a minute, but The reason I'm so keen to ask you about that is it really reminded me of lots of the stories in Jim Collins's Good to Great book, which so many of the MDs and CEOs that come on the show reference. I just wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about that decision. And then I'm really curious to know sort of how did it feel making that bold decision so early on in your tenure as an MD?
Yeah, so I guess I was relatively privileged in as much as print was part of my family DNA. My father had a successful print business in the 80s and then saw a very rapid decline in print in the 90s. So my introduction to print was very much a natural progression when my city career sort of stalled and my skills became redundant. Getting into the print business was something that was relatively easy and relatively natural. However, when I did it, I was also really aware of the challenges of print and how it had become commoditized in the 90s and early noughties. The introduction of the internet made it such an open marketplace for print that the specialist sort of print companies and print consultants became almost obsolete. Anyone could buy print, anyone could get 10 quotes. So when I took the business over, I had a pretty good understanding at that point that to make a successful career in print was going to be a real challenge. However, what I had seen and lived and breathed was that surrounded by the actual physical print and production, there were ancillary services which not only excited me, but gave businesses the opportunity to really add value and make a difference. So pretty early on, when I took the business over, there was a pretty clear vision at that point from my perspective. And I was relatively lucky that I had a really wide network of friends, contacts, peers, and I'd had a business and marketing degree. So there was a really easy, and I say easy, it was a relatively straightforward decision to look into the design and the advertising and more of the ancillary and the print to take a lower importance in the commercial performance of the business. So we worked very hard. We had a plan, we had a strategy. And look, Ben, between you and I, we got relatively lucky in some of the contacts we made and some of the accounts we won. But we worked very hard with a clear strategy to become much more in terms of the creative, the advertising, the stuff that really got my juices flowing, and also which would give the business the opportunity to grow and expand. Whereas print now is all about, you know, it's about technology, it's about cost reduction, it's about commoditizing. And it's an industry where the big boys have flourished because they have the investment and the finance to be able to cut costs and deliver cheaper print. And because we were sort of self-funded, we never really had that as an option. So the sort of long answer is it was planned and it was very much in our focus and business plan. But we had an element of luck then.
Okay. Just a few seconds ago, you said between you and I just want to remind you, we've got a couple hundred people listening. So it's not just you and I, Dan.
Sorry, as you can tell, this is slightly outside my comfort zone. I've still got my old plates on.
But it's really interesting as well. What you said straight after that, I hear a lot, and you said it a couple of times there, we got really lucky. And I always like to test this with guests on the show when they say it. Do you think you actually did get lucky, or do you believe as an individual, as a business, kind of you create and build your own luck?
Yes. So I've always had the saying that the harder you work, the luckier you are. We did have an element of luck, but you know what? We saw an opportunity. We made sure that as a business, we had the right skill sets, that we were dynamic and agile, that we also understood what our clients wanted and what our clients needed. So we worked very hard to make sure we had the right mixtures and ingredients of skill, talent, and determination, that when we got what I would probably describe as some lucky opportunities, we were fully in a position to take advantage of those. So combination of both, I think, is the answer, Ben.
Yeah, amazing. And next thing I'd love to ask, Dan, is again, just taking you back to that first day, first week when you was in the MD seat. How did that feel? Kind of what were some of the first things you did? And really, I guess what I'm asking is sort of what's your advice to people when they step into that chair for the first time?
I'm quite naturally a risk taker. So for me, when I got the opportunity, there was an element of risk, but it was a stage of my life when the risk was relatively low in terms of my family situation. So it felt like the culmination of a number of years, because I'm relatively entrepreneurial and I aspired to run my own ship. So when I eventually got there, there was an element of achievement there, but that pretty quickly was replaced with the actual plan that we had to have. And it felt a bit daunting for a while because, you know, we had very high objectives and we had a pretty clear plan, which was going to take a lot of hard work, a lot of determination and a lot of effort. So I think from the outset, when I got there, there was a small amount of achievement that we'd actually finally done it and we were there. And me personally was now in charge and in control of the boat. But that was pretty quickly coupled with the fact that we would, you know, it was a tricky time in the economy. We were very embryonic with a lot of our customers and it felt a big job from day one. And that's never really changed, Ben. I guess the advice to wannabe managing directors, senior managements now is to be very considerate and thoughtful about creating a business plan, sticking to a business plan, having clear objectives and making sure that you understand exactly what the risks are, what the challenges are. And it's something that stood me in pretty good stead moving forward.
I heard you say that probably you're naturally quite a bit of a risk taker, naturally entrepreneurial, but still it felt a little bit daunting, which I think is interesting because, again, it's a slight cliche, I guess, but lots of people talk about and leadership or the job of a leader is often described as a lonely one. So how did you sort of manage and cope with that sort of daunting feeling? Did you have a series of mentors, coaches, advisors around you? Because sometimes we don't necessarily want to share some of those worries, insecurities with our team. But I think it's important to find a way to manage them. So just wonder what that looked like for you, Dan.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? In the last 3 or 4 years, I have, as the business has grown, I found it has become more lonely. And the demands on you as a leader and the responsibilities on me as a leader to represent and make the right decisions for a lot of people and stakeholders within the business who have got families, mortgages. So yeah, I'd agree with that. It can be very lonely. I've been very fortunate to have some natural peers and mentors in my life and big influences who've helped shape me as not only a person, but in terms of some of my leadership skills and help me, you know, overcome some of the challenges and obstacles that come to any managing director. And even now, I call on, you know, some great friends, some great peers who are more skilled than I am, who have had more experience than I am. And that helps you as a sounding board to really understand and to help shape some of the decisions you make and just to help de-risk some of the challenges and some of the obstacles that we face. So yeah, I've got at least 3 or 4 that I can call on with various skills that have been very influential. And I think it's hugely important for any leader to have the access to that form of mentorship, influence, experience, just to help as a sounding board more than anything.
Amazing. And are there any particular leadership tools, models, frameworks that you rely on to help you effectively lead the business?
Do you know what? I'm way more of a gut instinct sort of leader. I guess the way I've been brought up and what's in my DNA shapes the leader I am rather than any specific framework or textbook. As the business has got bigger and the demands have got more on me as an individual, I've had to take a little bit more framework and shape. And I'm very fortunate that we've got a great team around me that help me in those particular areas, give the business a bit more structure. There are some, there's one or two books that have made a real difference to me. And do you know what? If I was to look back now at the degree I studied, I did a business degree, and I look back now and I so wish I'd done a psychology degree because, you know, psychology for me personally, and I feel this on a daily basis, is one of the most important tools that a man manager, a leader, a managing director, anyone in senior management can have. Because on a day-to-day basis, on an hour-to-hour business, we're dealing with individuals, we're dealing with human beings. So I take great solace from some of the skill sets in my team who have that psychology background because they can see things slightly different to me. Just one book, just as a reference now, well, one or two. The one that I've read recently that I found fantastic was Ant Middleton's Fear Bubble. there is an element of anxiety, probably undiagnosed anxiety within me. And I guess I'm a little bit of a worrier. And the book that Ant Middleton's just done is incredible because it helps you to put into bubbles those fears and anxieties that we get so that they don't affect and influence you on a regular basis. The other book that was really interesting was Who Moved the Cheese? Ben, you've probably read it. I think everyone has, but it really resonated with me that within a business, you know, in a particular business that gets bigger, you have so many different personalities, and businesses historically now, and particularly with COVID, have to change, adapt, and be dynamic. So that book gave me a really good insight into various psychologies and how to perhaps try and manage change within an organization.
I have to make a confession, actually. I've not read Who Moved My Cheese, which was someone doing my work is probably a bit of an omission, because it is one of those absolute classics that kind of nearly everyone has read and takes value from. So I'll have to get a copy and sit down and read it.
It's not a long book, Ben, but it's really, really interesting in the basic lesson behind it. And it's something that I often refer back to. You know, I've got one or two other books that have been quite interesting. Rocket Fuel is another one that I really recommend, because it's just helped give me a real clear CT scan, if you like, of the business and the characters and the personalities. And it helps you mold the ingredients you need to create the right recipe. So, yeah, there are a number of books that I find is, you know, been really helpful and I go to, I guess, when I need a little bit more of a reminder of some of the basics and how the business needs me to perform.
And what are you learning about, reading about, curious about right now?
Yeah, so right now I'm actually reading about, I'm reading Denise Welch's book about depression. Depression's been part of my family history, and we've had some traumas around it, and it's something that I think I was relatively ignorant about. So I'm reading it relatively quickly just to get an understanding from a very human perspective about depression and the behavioral patterns of depression, how it affects people and how it can influence people and how it's invisible, you know? So a little bit off track, I guess, in terms of leadership, but it's something that's affecting so many people, particularly with COVID, and it's something I was very keen to get a better understanding of. There's another book as well it's on my list. I've started The Subtle Art of Not Giving a...
Yeah, I know the one. I've seen it on the bookshelves.
Have you? Yeah. So I guess the title in itself was something that intrigued me. And it's something where, again, I mentioned that anxiety does play a little part in my life. So it's again trying to find self-help books to help me cope with that and help me, you know, improve my performance from a human perspective.
Just to touch on the piece around reading the book about depression, and you said it's a little bit perhaps off topic for leadership. I think probably it's very much on topic for leaders and leadership, maybe more so now than ever. Like listeners on the show will have heard me talk a lot about my belief that a leader's job is to deliver the goal or the number and to look after those people we've got the responsibility to lead, because everybody we lead is the most important person in someone else's life, right? And I think more and more organizations now are starting to train their leaders and managers in mental health first aid. So I think it's absolutely on topic for leaders, and probably something we should, I'll try not to say should, perhaps something we could all be learning a little bit more about, just so we're a little bit more skilled and able to spot some of those warning signs in not just our colleagues, I guess our loved ones as well.
Absolutely. And obviously COVID has brought that to a head. And we, like a lot of businesses, were locked down. We tried to have regular Zoom calls. And the health and welfare of our staff and our people and our stakeholders it was always a priority before, Ben, but I think what COVID's done is bring that human element, because every single person, you know, that's within our business has their own individual challenges, troubles, issues. So for me personally, there was a trigger that caused me to go down this road in terms of exploring depression more. But you're absolutely right. I think it's making me much more aware now. And you know, we have 30 members of staff that look to me and have expectations of me personally. So it's really important to be able to understand, you know, the inner workings of depression and how it can affect people's lives, their performance, their behavior. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And maybe there was a subconscious part of me when I chose to read this book, was actually conscious of the staff and some of the challenges they could be facing.
I'm sure there probably was. I think our subconscious is much, much more powerful than we often realize.
Yeah.
I'm conscious of your time. So I'd just love to finish with a couple of slightly quicker fire questions if we can. First one is, where does your personal energy and motivation come from on those dark winter mornings when you're facing challenges at work? What gets you out of bed and into the office with a spring in your step?
Do you know what? Pre-COVID, it was routine. And I drill myself every morning to a specific routine. You know, the miracle morning is very much on my to-do list to get back into that. But my main driver and my sole motivation is my family, Ben. You know, I've got four children, a wife, a dog, and it's those guys, you know, and it's providing for them, giving them the platform, doing everything in my power, along with obviously my team who I respect enormously, all my staff who give so much commitment to this business. There's a natural responsibility of a number of people that I shoulder and gets me going every single morning.
Brilliant. And actually, you touched on my final question there, so let me dive into that in a touch more detail. I was going to ask, do you have any particular routines, ways of working that are particularly effective for you?
So yeah, and they slipped during COVID actually. I'm a real morning person. I go to bed, I've got a good routine. I go to bed relatively early to keep myself fresh in the morning. And it's about getting some exercise in, getting myself focused, getting myself smart, shaving, getting myself dressed, getting my mind in the right frame of mind to come in and really really perform efficiently from the first moment I hit the office. COVID has affected that because I found myself and I found my priorities shifting a little bit towards helping my wife with the school run, you know, taking the dog for a walk first thing in the morning. And that's, I guess I've slipped a little bit. So I think there's a real focus on me now that hopefully we're going to come out of COVID, to get myself back into that real routine of getting myself smart and agile first thing in the morning.
Yeah. And last question, I heard you use the phrase miracle morning. Talk to me a little bit about that. What's the miracle morning?
Funny enough, one of my team members, our strategy director this morning, yesterday morning, we were chatting, and I was explaining to her about the fact I'm slightly less focused at the moment in my morning routine. And I felt that my performance in the mornings hasn't been as sharp. And funny enough, it was her that said to me, okay, so this thing called the miracle morning, and it's something that I need to explore a little bit more. But from what I understand, it's about getting myself really focused, doing whatever's necessary to getting myself in the right shape mentally, and that could involve physical exercises, physical routines, but getting myself in a position that by 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm there, I'm on it, and I'm ready to go. So, yeah, that's all TBC.
Dan, thank you so much for your time and coming on the show today. There's so many little golden nuggets in there that I've been scribbling down. I'm sure the listeners are going to get so much value from. Once again, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Ben, it's been a real pleasure.
So there you have it, folks. My interview with Dan Hawley, Managing Director of PLB Group. I hope you got loads from the episode. I know that I certainly did. And as always, it would be amazing if you could head over to iTunes and subscribe to the show, as it really does help us grow the audience and enables us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with incredible MDs and CEOs. And also, if you could share the link to this episode of the show across your social media channels and with your friends and colleagues, that would be a huge help to us here as well. That's it for this episode, folks. Take care and lead on.